The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is indeed Friday. Casual Friday, May 6, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Oh, my gosh, folks. It's almost a crime that I would call today Casual Friday. We're casual, but we're not casual. I guess we're semi-casual today. Ladies and gentlemen, today will mark the first day we have a live guest in studio riding shotgun with me talking about the news today. Will be the great Cliff Schechter in the house. And, of course, later in the program, we will talk to old what's-his-face from where blankety-blank.com. Chris Rosen from MovieLine.com. will be here to give us his Friday Netflix streaming and on-demand picks. As you know, folks, I am not allowed to go out to a theater anymore because my child and my wife have conspired to neuter me in the way that Alan West had suggested they always would have. If only he had come on the scene earlier, I would have known. So, folks, let me introduce. Oh, and, of course, we'll take your calls today at 646-257-3920 later in the program. Stick around also for the post-show if you're listening live. And if you're a member, if you're not, well, sorry. Here with me in the studio, ladies and gentlemen, he has just come up in the plush elevator. We have walked him in from the plush green room. He is enjoying the many amenities here that we've set up for guests. As soon as he puts down the dustbin and the whisk broom that we ask all our guests just to do a little cleaning up as they come in. Cliff Schechter, welcome, Cliff.
Thank you so much, Sam. The first guest ever. And I mean,
first guest live. In studio.
Many genius guests, but just so you know, the green room now is indeed green. I did have to pick my nose while I was in there.
I understand. There you go, folks. We have managed to, again, showing you that when you become a member to the Majority Report, we don't waste your money. We find all sorts of different ways of cutting corners. Now, Cliff, I know how much you love to crap on Republicans. And I don't, did you catch the...
Like a Shiza video.
Yes, exactly. Did you... We'll post that on majority.fm. Did you catch the Republican debate last night?
I sadly was on Amtrak, and so I did not.
But was this thing televised? Does anybody even know if this thing was televised? Matt, do you know?
I believe it was. I saw people talking about it as if they were watching it.
Maybe it was on C-SPAN. Maybe it was on...
It was in South Carolina, right?
Right.
Did Strom Thurmond participate? Or
no.
Is he buried at sea, too?
I think they Did they hold the? Did they bury him under the? They put him underneath the stage. Well, in case you missed it, folks, and I must admit I did too because, well,
Fox News showed it.
Fox News showed it. Oh, I'm sorry I missed that. Fortunately, the ethically and follically challenged Frank Luntz was on the scene to give us one of his expert panels. This is a group of Americans who reflect America. Does anybody want to give me the racial breakdown in South Carolina?
Much more black than the Republican debate.
Well, Frank Luntz assembled, maybe this is the Republican Party, I should say. Frank Luntz assembled 23 Republican, I guess, potential primary voters. Coincidentally, and this is going to come as a shock to everybody, they were all white.
Surprise, surprise.
In fact, there were more black people on the stage running for the Republican nomination than there were actually who were going to be voting for him. There was 23 white people assembled in a room. And here is, let's play the first clip from the focus group watching this debate. Here it is. Frank Luntz is going to be stunned. Here it is.
Sean, we got 29 of the most important people in America.
Stop that for a second. That is my, I apologize, folks. 29 white people in a room. I'm sorry. That is almost, what's the percentage there?
29 of 29?
No, I'm saying I underestimated the amount of white people in that room by almost 25%.
I'm
20%.
A little disappointed in you.
Not a math
guy. But you did, it was fair you made that mistake because it was white sheet night.
That's right. There you go, yes. They actually had a couple of people under one sheet.
There were discounts at Walmart and some people had to run out.
There you go. All right, so let's go dial it back to use Frank Luntz terms. And
sorry, Sam.
There you go. No, I'm saying the sound.
Ah, gotcha.
Go ahead.
Sean, we got 29 of the most important people in America sitting right behind me right now. Let's go right to them. Who won the debate? Let's go in alphabetical order. How many of you think Herman Cain won the debate?
Everybody.
Well, we can stop right there.
Everybody.
John, I want a word or phrase to describe Herman Cain.
He answers the question most direct.
A breath of fresh air.
Common sense.
Talking points, no real solutions.
Clear and concise.
Very impressive.
He had an understanding of what it takes to run the government via Canada.
The godfather of business sense, and he can attack Obama well.
He'll give us a clear-cut plan on which way to take America.
How many of you walked in here with Herman Cain as your number one choice? Raise your hands.
One person raises his hand.
One of you. How many of you are walking out of here with Herman Cain as your number one choice?
25.
Raise your hand. Now, this is unprecedented.
A slice of pizza in your other
he hand. Was not a real candidate before tonight. No. What happened?
Well, he is now. He talked exactly correctly on taxation and on free markets and leadership.
He has a plan. He has a plan. He's articulate, and he knows exactly what we need.
Now, I have an alternate theory as to why Herman Cain might have appealed to this group of 29 white South Carolinians.
They were scared of him?
And it's not, they all thought they were going to get a free pizza coupon.
Exactly.
I think this is what is known as the, isn't it the Wilder effect that they talked about?
That's right.
Right? The, what is the Wilder effect?
A few of them were probably thinking to themselves, did I lock the back porch door before I left?
The idea is like, oh, I'm gonna be for the black guy. Now, I wonder if in the South Carolina primary, if Herman Cain actually makes it that far. And, that's, what is it, like the fourth primary, right?
It is, right? Yeah, it's a,
in
right,
the Republican?
The fourth, yeah, I think so.
I think it goes Iowa, New Hampshire. And
there's
then,
one out west, isn't there?
Yeah.
And maybe the third, but I don't remember. There is one out west. I don't remember if it's Nevada or.
And it could very well be. I am willing to bet you. Everything I own, which is essentially in this room, actually, at this point, Cliff, and maybe you won't take this bet, but I'm willing to bet you that Herman Cain does not get whatever the percentage of 24 out of 29 is in South Carolina.
I'd like to take the bet just because there's some amazing, amazing stuff in this room. do these two guys come with it?
Sure, of course. Believe me.
I definitely need some. No, I'm just kidding. But I can't take that bet because I don't think he's going to get anything close.
I think he'll get maybe 2%.
Yeah, I mean.
Let's go now and listen to the second clip where we can actually hear what Herman Cain had to say that got all these 29 white South Carolinians, the most important people in America, according to Frank Luntz.
back to the antebellum period.
Huh? Yes, exactly. Let's see what got them all so excited.
Sean, I want to show you this one clip where he talked, it scored incredibly high. It was actually the highest dialed moment. Let me borrow this. The red line represents conservatives. The green line represents slightly less conservative. The higher that they turn their dials, the more favorable the reaction. This is Herman Cain at his best. Let's take a look.
One of the biggest problems we have with this country right now today is too much government intervention in trying to tell businesses how to do what they do best, which is create jobs. Government doesn't create jobs. Businesses create jobs. We need to get government out of the way, including trying to tell a company where they should build a new plant.
You guys agree with that? Yeah.
Woo! Now, there's a little backstory to this. At least to the government telling him where they should do a plant. Maybe you're aware of this National Labor Relations Board suit against Boeing, which has stated publicly, we're going to leave Seattle, I think it is, or somewhere right. in the Seattle neighboring yeah, area, yeah. And go to South Carolina because unionized workers complain too much. And that is against, actually, the National Labor Relations Board regulations and laws.
Well, unionized workers like to eat and stuff, and that does suck.
And so they want to move to South Carolina. That's what Herman Cain's talking about. The rest of the stuff is just jibber-jabber.
Right.
I have no idea what he's talking about. Government doesn't create jobs. Well, somehow we've lost almost 400,000 government jobs in the past year.
Well, you also might want to look on the stage with him because there are probably a bunch of governors and senators on there. So my guess is the government did create their jobs.
That's right.
So and a little common sense there.
And I guess, when people pick up your trash or when they protect your fire, right. your house from fire,
right.
or when they protect you from bad guys, or when they build your streets, when they make sure that your water is fine, I guess when they check your food to make sure it's not poisoned, when they help the airplanes
right.
land, when they make sure that on and on.
I think we should be the first here to say on the Majority Report, because it's important, that what Herman Cain, the translator, has actually said is the Navy SEAL guys that killed Osama bin Laden don't have real jobs.
They don't have real jobs.
They're a bunch of home, they're sucking off the rest of us that, oops, I shouldn't have said that, sucking economically off the rest of us, and they're lazy and they're unproductive. And I really think it's atrocious that Herman Cain would say that Navy SEALs are such bad people.
If Herman Cain, if we can have the vision, if this country could somehow have the blessing, as it were, since we're talking about a debate in South Carolina, the blessing that Herman Cain could be our president, maybe we could all have pizza delivery grade jobs.
Right. And maybe we could actually send Godfather's Pizza in to get Osama bin Laden the next time.
There we go.
Because that would have been.
So let's move on from the Republican debate because there was no one there. You know, look, I appreciate there was a couple of Republicans there who said, get out of Afghanistan, get out of Iraq. And I'm on board with that.
Just a question, because I didn't catch it. Did anybody else besides Gary Johnson say that?
Ron Paul.
Oh, right. Of course. Okay.
Ron Paul did.
So we had two, at least on these issues, sane.
Yeah, and apparently, I had a YouTube that apparently the Ron Paulites were up in arms that I said he has no chance of winning in becoming president. Listen, God bless you, Ron Paulites. I hope your guy wins the nomination. I know you guys are tireless. I've seen you paint the town, Ron. I've seen you put up your homemade posters, and I'm not mocking you for that. I applaud you for that. But I got news for you. Your guy's never going to win the nomination unless he runs faster than a man his age without bionic legs can run from the true agenda of the Republican Party, which is about, hating gays. And, right.
He needs to rand himself a little bit.
That's
in other words, Ron Paul needs to rand himself and do what Rand Paul did when he started off his Senate run as Mr. Libertarian. And suddenly, Afghanistan wasn't that bad. And suddenly, it's amazing how along the way he became more of a consistent Republican on a whole lot of issues.
Right, a movement conservative. And, the only thing, the one thing he had going for him with the Republican base was, of course, his sense that there shouldn't be the Civil Rights Act. We shouldn't, you should be able to discriminate in your own.
Right.
If you have a store, there's no point in having a restaurant if you don't have the ability to say, I'm not going to serve blacks.
who would want a restaurant under any other circumstances?
I mean, honestly, that should be the God-given right of every American to discriminate against black people.
Right, unless Rand Paul can kick Herman Cain out of his restaurant.
That's right.
Then he doesn't want to have a restaurant.
Right. In fact, maybe that's why Herman Cain started his own pizza place. And that's how you get economic growth, by discriminating against black people. And
that's
then
an excellent theory. I think you should push that one.
And, you know, and if Ron Paul will give up the persistence of his ideology. You know, Rand Paul famously said, well, I'm going to vote against the debt limit increase because I know it's not going to happen. I know that we will still increase the debt. And so I can afford to take that brave, principled vote because it's not going to have any impact. So kudos to him for understanding what it takes to be a Republican. let's go to Ryan Care, because can you figure out what the Republicans are doing with this Ryan Care? They must. They obviously realize now. They see the polls.
Yeah.
They realize that destroying Medicare or
shockingly
Ryan Care,
not that popular.
It's shockingly unpopular.
Yeah.
What are they going to do about this?
I don't know. I think they have screwed themselves out of a majority, which I find pretty funny. I mean, the ads that are going to come now. You've got obviously independent groups, a la Karl Rove's group, but being created on the left, so the right will not have. I mean, they'll always have a financial advantage of some sort, but because the coke heads, but they, you know, they won't have the kind of advantage they had last time. And wow, millions of dollars of advertisements are going to remind people that all these guys voted to end Medicare. That'll hurt you with your over 55 set. So good luck, guys, and smart voting.
Well, apparently it hurts you with just about everybody. This is according to the Wall Street Journal, a Quinnipiac poll, 1,400 registered voters, university polled, and they controlled for people's knowledge of the budget. They told, I think, at least half of them that Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and defense spending consume 60% of the budget. The other half were not told that. Among those who were told, 70% opposed efforts to change Medicare, and only 75% compared with 75% who weren't told. So regardless of whether or not you're reminded how much of a slice of the budget it takes, people, that's a reflection of Americans' priorities.
Right.
And for Medicaid, 57% of the first group opposed limits compared with 59% of the control group. Now, that's because I think there's a certain segment of people who say, oh, poor people, well, they're morally, but still, it's still a vast majority, 57%. And I think if they were told that the majority of people who get Medicaid are actually seniors who simply have exhausted their Medicare and all their income because they're in a nursing home,
it'd be amazing.
It would go back up.
Yeah, the Republicans made the mistake of, it was very easy, you know, 10 years ago to attack programs that only help the poor. Easy. No constituency. A lot of people who are poor don't vote. And, of course, they do, quite often Democratic. But now, when you start going after those programs that middle and upper middle class people actually rely upon, that and people who vote and often are your constituency, big oops on that one.
That's right. The idea that, well, I'm just going to put $5 in the stock market every year, and by the time I retire, I'll be a multimillionaire. That's sort of out the window these days. and the only significant change came on the question of defense spending, with support for cuts increasing by 7% when voters were told how much the government spends on the military. And I really wonder, like, if that was also put into context. I mean, if people knew that we spend double the entire world's defense budget.
Right.
If we wouldn't say, like, hey, maybe we don't need 750, 800 bases around the world. And listen to this, 69% of the voters polled favored repealing Bush-era tax breaks on households that earn more than $250,000.
And that seems like a pretty solid group to me.
What is stunning to me is that even though the Republicans now are afraid of their own Republicare budget, because they all voted for the Ryan
right, it's like
Medicare
all but like six of them or something.
So all but six.
I think that's right. So good luck, guys.
Even though they're running away from this, and even though they're talking about coming to some type of budget deal or debt ceiling deal based upon removing that element of it, which, of course, would even make it more impossible for his budget to actually be balanced.
Right.
Even though we're seeing a majority of people want to raise taxes, none of these things, we're not going to see this on the table. The Democrats aren't doing this.
No. No.
Explain it to me. Why, Cliff?
Because the Democrats, sadly, too many Democrats have been as we know, bought off and by many of the same interests. I mean, you look at some of the terrible blue dogs. There's obviously some, I think there still exists a new Democratic coalition. Maybe it's now called Third Way or 18th Way or you know, yeah. But I mean, in all seriousness, that the problem is, I mean, look, since Obama got there, since we've had these House majorities, all this stuff has been clear. I mean, these new polls are great, but they only reflect what every poll has been saying all along. I mean, I was surprised even that you had that defense budget number, because when put in context, people think defense spending should be cut. When put in context, people think that the Bush-era tax cuts are ridiculous. And, you know, if you put in context for people who's actually getting a lot of the farm subsidies, they'll find that to be ridiculous, too. Take care of those issues, like, we'd have a surplus and then some. You don't even need to go anywhere near, you know, Medicare and Social Security. So I mean, it's ridiculous. And these polls, it's just like with the public option and don't ask, don't tell, and banning assault weapons. And, I mean, you can go on and on through the issues. The American people are with where the Democratic position should be on everything. So if there's a couple scared Democratic congressmen who are from very right-wing districts, I can understand on certain issues. But for the most part, the Democratic coalition should be completely united on almost everything. And even a few of those blue dog guys in conservative districts might want to grow something called a sack and actually stand up for some real principles. But they just can't. I mean, it's like they can't. I mean, it appalls me.
We're not going to see McCaskill do that either, literally or metaphorically. It appears
literally not metaphorically. I mean, metaphorically not literally. I certainly hope not.
This USA Today, and I'm glad this is coming out. I hope you're not tired of me harping on this, but Americans are paying the smallest share of their incomes for taxes since 1958. The total tax burden dropped to 23.6% of income in the first quarter. This is according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis. I think it's even dropped below that for people who are making over $1 million, adjusted for 1961 dollars.
Right.
By contrast, individuals spent roughly 27% of their income on taxes in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. In the 70s, I believe people making over a million spent were closer to like 40% of their income, a rate that would mean $500 billion of extra taxes annually today, which amounts to more than one-third of the estimated $1.4 trillion-some-odd deficit. So you would close that deficit almost, you know, to take one third of that deficit off the table.
Right.
At a time when we're going through an economic recession, which is the biggest contributor to the deficit, because not only are people paying less income, less share of their income in taxes, they're also paying less real money revenue to the government because people aren't making as much money.
Right. Well, also, as you know, you can't raise taxes and have prosperity. Oh, wait, that's right. That happened under Bill Clinton. I'm sorry.
Yes, and actually it happened. You had higher taxes in the decade before Ronald Reagan, and you also had more growth than Ronald Reagan experienced.
What's so frustrating is if you go...
Or actually, we should also say in the 40s and 50s and 60s, when we had massive... the Great Compression, as it was called, where more people actually got raised their standard of living and their income.
Right. I mean, these people aren't economic conservatives. They're zealots and they're nuts. And the problem is they control the culture in Washington now. I mean, if you go back to people that were considered economic conservatives all the way back to Alexander Hamilton, they got that you needed to invest in infrastructure. They understood that economic development, I know, a crazy concept, leads to jobs. And if you let your roads and your transportation and your telecommunications and everything else fall into disrepair, well, you fall apart, you know. People understood in the 40s and the 50s, and you know, that there was a common good, and
right,
that at a certain level, people that had benefited from this country had to pay higher taxes, and they did. We all prospered.
And you know what happened to a certain extent? The problem is that the common good started including a bunch of people who weren't white. If you ask my my opinion.
Point. Then who weren't straight.
Yes,
and
I mean,
who
if you go
women
back,
who wanted to work.
If you go
crazy
back
women.
And look at the societal, and now look, Republicans from back from 1936 were against things like Social Security. But if you go back, you will find that welfare and aid to people who are having a hard go of it was not really truly demonized until after black people became basically full citizens.
Right.
And that's when it really started to get fully demonized. All right, it is. We're a little bit overdue to talk to Chris Rosen. Will you stick around and help me decipher what Chris Rosen is suggesting? Because I know you have kids. You're not allowed to go out and see a movie. So this could be helpful for you.
I'm barely allowed to even go out. So yeah, sure.
Right. I mean, who's allowed to go out? All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Chris Rosen. Jimmy Reefer Cakes, now famous Chris Rosen theme song. And I should remind you, and please remind me, Evan, Jimmy Reefer Cakes sent in his Weekend News song. He actually seemed to have done it Wednesday. But what are you going to do? Wait, Chris, what are you doing?
I'm just moving a little bit.
Oh, that's good. I'm watching him walk around his... what are you trying to prove?
I can give you a tour of my apartment.
Yeah, it turns out, just like Bin Laden, Chris Rosen does not live in a cave.
Nor a mansion, as it turns out.
No, neither. All right.
Just a compound.
Chris, let's go over, everybody knows the premise of this segment. Last week, you suggested to me, what did you suggest? Oh, God.
All right, Toy Story 3?
You suggested Marwin Call.
Oh, Marwin Call.
Which is a documentary that sounds great. You hadn't seen it, which leads me to believe that it could very well be great.
Yeah,
and I didn't have a chance to watch that because
you're watching Toy Story 3.
No, Nikki is so obsessed now with Battlestar Galactica that's the only thing that we can watch on Netflix.
Why don't I just suggest that then? Well, I got a great suggestion.
It's a little late. A little late. A little late. And then the other thing you suggested was this little known movie called The King's Speech, which apparently
I've heard of that somewhere.
Which apparently won an Academy
That's
Award
not the point
6 weeks
of the
ago.
Segment.
What a ridiculous...
Cliff, you're there. Back me up. That's not the point of the segment.
I have no clue what the point of the segment is.
My point exactly.
All right. So what do you have for us this week? Chris Rosen, senior editor at MovieLine.com. I should explain to Cliff, I know you hear the term senior editor. You assume, wow.
It sounds very impressive.
Must be a lot of junior editors.
Right.
Actually,
I don't think so.
No. No, senior. No. That's it.
Is it a one-man gig?
No, it's not. There's a whole staff here. It's a full-fledged operation.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many people who have to go and review things. Like, it's almost impossible to find a review of The King's Speech anywhere.
That's not what the point of this segment is. It's to suggest things to you that you haven't seen, which is everything. It's very easy. I can just throw a dart at the wall and hit something.
Yes, but the point is also you want to encourage me to watch movies, not the, you know.
Well, you should have watched The King's Speech. Everyone saw it. You should be one of the everyone. And you can say how shitty it is. That's the point.
All right, let's go. What do you got?
This is a tough week because there wasn't a lot of new releases out.
It's a tough, week.
You may have heard of a movie called Black Swan.
Netflix, I already suggested that a couple weeks ago.
On Netflix, they only have new releases. Like, you can't.
No!
God forbid Chris Rosen should go back before
I am.
The 2011 Oscar nominees.
That's what I'm doing. So today, my you know, there was nothing on Time Warner On Demand that I thought you would like, though I did toy with the idea of suggesting Gulliver's Travels just to see your reaction with Jack Black. Instead, we'll go to Amazon.
Well, you know, but here's the worst part about what you're about to say. Because you say, like, I was going to just sort of play
a joke
on you.
No, it's going to be a documentary. You'll probably have seen it.
I was
going to
play a joke on you and say Gulliver Travels. But it's going to end up being like Wedding Crashers 2, man. Check it out.
No, that's not out yet. But, you know, someday we could suggest that. No, this one I actually wanted to suggest a documentary that you might have seen. But it's the Tillman story is on Amazon On Demand.
The Pat Tillman one?
Yes. And it came out, I think, 2 years ago or, yeah, you know, 2010 it came out. So it came out last summer.
That looks kind of interesting.
That looks kind
of
interesting.
It's a very good documentary, and it talks about, like, you know, what happened and how his death was, you know, politicized and everything. And it's on – you have to pay for it on Amazon. I don't know how that works, but it's only, like, $3.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. I give that suggestion an A.
An A. Now I'll blow it. You know, you could shit on it because here's the next one I'm suggesting because, you know – this is, you know, you might not know this, Sam, because obviously you've had a busy week with all the real news, but this week is the kind of start of summer blockbuster season.
Oh, God.
Excellent.
Thor is out in theaters today. You know, you've probably seen the commercials for that.
No.
No. Well, it's about Thor. He has a hammer. Anyway, looking for something on Netflix, I thought it'd be fun. I'm having a cross in the wires. I'm hearing some music playing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is that on your end too?
I was just going to my happy place.
It's NSA.
All right.
It means the SEALs are about to land here.
So anyway, I was going to suggest Die Hard with a Vengeance on Netflix Instant Watch. It's free and it's a fabulous summer blockbuster. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, you were suggesting the shittiest of the Die Hard.
No, actually, it's a great Die Hard. I totally am on board with it. I think it's as good as the first Die Hard. It's a total rebound. Same director as the first one. Samuel Jackson is great. It takes place in New York. It's got all kinds of fun New York things. Jeremy Irons is the bad guy.
In fact, actually,
it's
I met the writer to that thing.
Oh, really? Well, who is that?
Some British dude.
Jeremy Irons is a very sexy blonde haircut for it.
This is the one where
he does.
Wait, is this the one where he goes and he has like a riddle or something like that?
Yeah, it's a bunch of riddles. It's like the Riddler in Batman.
Yeah, they have to run all over New York. And,
yeah. Seen it.
Well, it doesn't matter if you've seen it. I'm saying you should watch it. It's for free on Netflix. And, you know, you won't get out to see Thor this weekend.
I got news
for
you. Everything's free on Netflix.
Not everything.
I'm a member, you idiot.
Oh, right. That's right.
You don't. It's not a la carte on Netflix. Have you even checked out Netflix?
I have an account. I have an account. I didn't think I'd check these stupid movies.
Did you stream it?
Yeah.
Has MovieLine.com reviewed Who's the Caboose yet?
Not yet, Sam. It's not looking good. Oh. But I did love it. I'm on record as saying it was great. We do different kinds of DVD
Why don't you just review it?
Because, you know, it's a different kind of DVD coverage and stuff. We're not really doing it as much. It's
what do you mean as much? Are you covering DVDs?
Not as much.
What do you mean? Are you covering any DVDs?
I am not, no.
Is MovieLine.com covering DVDs?
Yes.
Okay. And the senior editor cannot get Who's the Caboose reviewed.
Maybe if I had an interview with, you know, a bunch of the stars and we could talk about how it was made.
Yeah, you get an interview with me every week.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was going to say, it's very important that you review it because to Sarah Silverman's career.
Yeah.
Because I think she's concerned that she's starting to lose some of that pizzazz.
Yeah. Sarah wants this reviewed.
Okay.
That's what I heard anyhow. I
mean, we could chat offline, maybe.
Oh, no, I'm not setting you up with an interview with her. Forget
it. Oh, well, come on. That would be a nice way to do it. I'd be like, what was it like to work with Sam?
I'll see if I can get you somebody from the King's Speech. All right,
Colin Firth, call me.
God. Are you hitting on Colin Firth?
No. He's just handsome, that's all.
Maren interviewed Colin Firth once.
Really? In his garage?
In Break Room Live.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you guys swing that?
Well, it wasn't a big deal.
It wasn't a big deal. Dude's like one of the most famous actors in the world.
Well, Maren was a part-time junior editor at MovieLine.com at the time.
That's
back
it.
When that site was relevant.
Did you get to interview Colin
Firth?
Listen to me.
Too? What? What?
Did you interview Colin Firth too?
No. Not interested.
Not interested?
No. What am I going to say to the guy?
I don't know. What's up? Start there.
Sam did almost yell hello to Kelsey Grammer while he was carrying a poodle, though.
That's right. We saw Kelsey Grammer,
really?
Grammer at a swimming pool in Vegas.
So that was important.
When was that?
I almost did go up to him. Like we were talking about going up and like, how does that turn network that he was going to do?
That's right, yeah. He just heard that right-wing crazy network it was called.
Apparently it didn't go very far.
We're going to ask him how that was doing.
All right, well, Chris Rosen, I will give you for today a mixed grade on your...
Fantastic!
I give you one thumbs up for the Tillman story. And I guess we will see you again next week, unless maybe somebody from some other website that does DVD reviews decides to review Who's the Caboose.
No, Sam, we have such a great rapport. I think this is working out really well.
Well, I'm sure I can have a great rapport with a lot of people.
Well, I'm just happy to know you now, Chris. I want you to know that.
Well, you know.
I love sharing the Friday.
Say hello and say goodbye.
Take it easy, buddy.
There he goes. I just hung up on him. I don't understand how we only do some DVDs on MovieLine.com. How much have we added to his Twitter account? Probably tons.
Three, four followers.
Yes. I can tell you how many he's added to ours. I don't even need to use words.
He does have 712 followers now, and if I recall, when I first started here a month ago, it was a lot less than that.
Yeah, there you go. There's our social media expert, the new Dorset. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report with us in studio for the day. Cliff Schechter. I should also tell you folks that I will be riding shotgun with Pap again on the Ed Schultz radio program immediately following today's show. And I will also be with Larry Kudlow on the Larry Kudlow show or whatever that's called on the Kudlow Report, the Kudlow Culling.
So many names,
CNBC.
So many jokes are going through my head, but any one of them will get you kicked off the show. So I'm gonna hold back.
Yes. It's out in New Jersey, for God's sakes. I think my hit time is 7:45, as we say in the business. Hit time at 7:45. So let's talk a little bit about Cliff. This is a wonderful story. As reported in The Guardian, an investigation by two NGOs, non-government organizations, into working conditions at two major Chinese factories run by Foxconn, responsible for pumping out iPads, finds that after a rash of suicides at the factories, what did the companies do to enhance their workers' well-being or to sort of create an environment that would get them to not kill themselves, literally.
I'm scared to ask.
They have forced workers to sign pledges promising not to kill themselves and instead to treasure their lives. I think it should be more
high on a hill was a lonely goat herd lay.
In addition, they promised that if they did kill themselves, their families would only seek the minimum in legal damages.
Very nice. Now, who is this again?
These are two major Chinese factories run by Foxconn, which produces all or many of the iPads for Apple. The research by the Center for Research on Multinational Corporations and Students and Scholars Against Corporate Misbehavior also found illegal overtime is common. One payslip stated 98 hours of overtime. The legal limit is 36. Workers were pushed to only take one day off out of 13 days in order to meet the demand for iPad orders. Public humiliation is required in some factories to discipline poorly performing workers. So
basically you're talking about Paul Ryan's America.
That's exactly right. I mean, honestly, when you hear of Republicans wanting to roll back child labor laws, when you hear of them wanting to destroy unions, which are there specifically to make working conditions and pay and benefits better for workers, when you hear of them wanting to roll back the minimum wage, when you hear them, like Herman Cain, say, "Get out, government, get out of the way! Less regulation, less protection of workers, less protection of consumers," this is where it ends, right?
This is what they're exactly saying. That's the translation of what they're saying.
Is there any Republican who would say that government should step in at this point if this was happening in America? Does government have a right to step in?
Is that a trick question?
Honestly, they wouldn't, would they?
None that I can think of.
This is the logical conclusion. And look, any Gulcher at this point, any libertarian would simply say these workers should go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Let the market decide. And if there's labor who is willing to go and work at a factory that is so bad, people are committing suicide. And really, you know, look, the whole notion of like you vowing not to commit suicide and that you will treasure your life. Understand, folks, that's the bullshit part of this. That's their way of saying, like, we're not just getting them to sign a waiver that says if they kill themselves, that they're forfeiting any rights to get from their family to get anything more than the minimum in legal damages.
What this is known as is misdirection.
Yes, exactly.
This is amazing to me because I thought China was supposed to be communist anyhow, and it didn't matter what you worked at or what you did. You're supposed to get full benefits. Isn't that the way it was supposed to work?
Right. No. Well, I mean, this theoretically, is the, yeah. This is the free
the new China.
The new China, where communism is actually just about political control and they don't interfere with businesses.
Right. I think that's called fascism, isn't it?
It was just a heartwarming story. But we have to compete with China. China's now going to be the number one economy. We got to compete with China.
We got to compete with a place that has no suicide pacts as part of their business plan.
That's right.
And that's why we're signing free trade deals, because that's what we want to compete with.
All right, so we have a caller at 646-257-3920. We'll get to you in just a moment. 646-257-3920. Let's do one more story before we leave. This is lovely. This is lovely. Now that the Republicans realize that they cannot derail, or they're taking a different tactic in trying to derail Elizabeth Warren's nomination to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Right.
Republican senators vowed yesterday to block any nominee to lead the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Wow. They're really stepping up their game, aren't they?
I mean, this is just stunning. It's just stunning. Now, how do they get away with this? Is this just total ignorance on behalf of their followers? I mean, one would think that regardless of what right-wing lie you believed about how the financial meltdown happened, one element of that would be mortgage fraud, right?
Yep.
I mean, whether you are in some type of fantasy land where you think it's because, banks were forced to lend to poor black people, and that's why this all happened, you have to believe that there were some nefarious lenders out there. And you also have to be subject. You also have to realize, like, you know, hey, my credit card bill just went up by 15 percentage points because I was late on my phone bill.
What's going on? Well, I think you already answered the question earlier in the show when you played the Herman Cain clip. What Republicans have learned is that slogans can for an electorate, and particularly among the Democratic base that largely don't pay attention to anything resembling reality, if you've got a great slogan about how, you know, government does too much, get government off our backs, or, you know, anything like that, then, you know, the government's trying to take over your health care. then people wouldn't actually look at the details and try to figure out exactly what these programs are doing for them or to help them, and we'll just jump in. And so that's the problem, is that it's an uninformed electorate. It's a bunch of crazy people on their side. Fox and others repeat these points.
And it's not just Fox and others, right? I mean, isn't it on some level also like the mainstream media?
It's the mainstream media that now, you know, he said, she said, that they right. can't actually tell the truth. And then even throw in the, I'm going to be generous here and say only a third of the Democratic Party that's been bought off.
Right.
The entire Blue Dog Coalition and some others that have been bought off. And when you combine all of that, that creates, you know, I'm probably missing a few things too, but that creates a situation.
Right. There you go. I mean, and meanwhile, watchdogs, and I hope this is a concerted effort. I mean, I hope these ethics watchdogs have been sort of encouraged Obama to sign this executive order that would force government contractors to disclose their political contributions. You're aware of this this draft order, right? I mean, this
yes.
is this is similar to the Disclose Act,
yep.
which failed in Congress because, of course, too many people are getting money from these people. But the idea is that if you do business with the government, you simply have to disclose: are you spending money in the political realm?
Right.
You don't have to. Doesn't in any way keep you from disclosing it. Just simply says, I have to disclose this money. And so if I'm contributing money to the Chamber of Commerce, or if I'm, you know, backing citizens for more weaponry, you know, being ordered from GE, I've got to disclose that.
It seems pretty insane to me.
It seems pretty insane that one would have a problem with that. But the argument is that this chills free speech.
Right. Because now, money is speech. That's part of this equation, which is ridiculous.
All right. Well, but let's even assume that you accept money is free speech.
Then the argument is, if you have to admit that you're giving money to people, then you won't do it. What does that say about you?
Well, I mean, what other realm of free speech can you pretend you're not engaged in?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's
right,
like,
right.
you know, what other realm? Even if you're anonymous, you know, if you do a blog under, you know, the name Zephyr Fighter or whatever it's
right.
going to be, people still know where it's coming from. People still know it's Zephyr Fighter. That person is associated with it.
That's true.
You know, I mean, these guys wouldn't even put up like, I'm brand X. At
right.
least Zephyr Fighter is consistent.
And still, I mean, and that's a good analogy, but even that doesn't tell. I mean, a blog versus the kind of influence these guys have.
Right.
I mean, it's. Obviously, it changes democracy.
And, you know, when Zephyr Fighter does it, more often than not, they actually have a legitimate, this could hurt my employment.
That's exactly right.
What is a corporation going to do?
Right. No, I mean, in that case, it's the same sort of idea as a whistleblower. It's somebody trying to protect
right.
their situation, as opposed to here, where it's somebody who's not trying to protect their just their employment, but the fact that they get a windfall of money goes both ways. And
all right, let's go. Let's take a call here. Line two is Michael in Rochester. He wants to talk about Foxconn. This is the iPad thing. What's up, Michael?
Yeah, actually, before I talk about that, I just want to preface that if I really want to get depressed when I wake up in the morning, I'll watch Washington Journal on C-SPAN.
I'll make a mental note to that because. God knows that's how
but
I
anyway,
that actually wakes
anyway,
you up.
Oh, guess who was on it this morning? Was Andrew Breitbart.
Oh.
And he was flogging his book.
Right, the serial liar.
And, you know, the usual conservative word salad out of him. Actually, I haven't really heard him at any length until this morning, so I guess I can't quite say that. But the most interesting part of it was when the host asked him about his drinking. And he started getting really defensive about it. Yeah, it was really.
The host asked him about his drinking?
That's amazing.
How did that come
yeah,
up?
Yeah, because in the book, he talks about, I guess, when he was at Tulane, he was basically, you know, a heavy drinker.
Uh-huh.
And so the guest asked him, he said, you know, so what's your state of your drinking now? And he goes, well, you know, what business of that is yours? And then he said, if you were talking to, you know, President Obama, would you ask him if he was still doing cocaine? You know, and then he started to go on to something else, and Breitbart came back to it again. So I thought that was really very interesting.
Oh, well, I'll keep that.
But anyway.
I will store that away next time I harass him on Twitter.
There you go.
I don't know if you've
but anyway,
followed
getting back to Foxconn,
my serial harassment of Breitbart on Twitter. But
I can attest it's lots of fun to
do. It is fun to do.
Let's take out the popcorn.
Go for it.
All right, so what else you got, Mike?
Go for it. Yeah, so there's a guy by the name of Mike Daisy, and he was on C-SPAN Q&A, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago. And Mike Daisy is like a monologist. He has kind of like a spoken word performance. And he went to China, and he went to Foxconn.
Oh, interesting.
And basically, I guess Foxconn is this enormous factory that hires about or has about 400,000 people, you know, working the assembly lines. The factory, I guess, is just enormous. It's like the size of a small town, and they have parallel what do they call it? They have parallel production lines. So you're building your Samsung TV in one, you're building your iPad in the other. It's really fascinating to listen to. So basically the first third of his conversation on this program, Q&A. But the interesting part was is that Foxconn is actually a Taiwanese company. And apparently the Taiwanese don't have a lot of regard for the Chinese, I mean, the mainland Chinese. So it's kind of reflected in how they treat their employees.
Interesting.
And he was saying, you know, I looked at the suicides, and he said the suicides stayed the same year after year after year. So he's thinking that they're somehow massaging those statistics, which wouldn't doubt, you know, cause me any doubt at all.
Interesting.
But that's funny because he couldn't get into the factory. He didn't tell the Chinese he was a journalist. He figured the minute I told them I was a journalist or some sort of reporter, they'd be on me, you know, just watching me like a hawk. But he did manage to get to one of the factory doors. And, you know, he talked to a lot of the workers, and they really opened up about him. But a fascinating thing that he said was, he said, you know, if there was anything you could change in the factory, what would it be to one of these workers? And the worker said, gee, you know, I never thought about that.
Wow. Fascinating.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to try and look that guy up and have him on the show. All right, Mike. I appreciate
you. Yeah, Mike Daisy. Really fascinating.
I'll check it out.
Fascinating guy.
Thanks, Michael. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Let's go to line three. We got somebody from Westchester. Who's this?
Dermo.
Who?
Dermo.
Dermo. What's up, Dermo?
Hi, Sam.
How are you?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
I can hear you a little bit.
Sam?
You're a little fuzzy. Are you calling on a cell phone?
Yeah. Sorry. Sam, I'll make this real fast. I'm keeping the casual Friday. A couple years ago, you did, when your show with Air America, you did a Southern Sheriff, and you had a little routine that you were doing, and it was hilarious. I can't find it. I'm trying to find it in the archives. I can't find it. Do you remember who it was?
Do I remember who it was?
The Southern Sheriff.
Oh, geez, man.
Boss Hogg?
I have no idea.
I'm saying it was hilarious. I'm just going to have to keep looking.
All right. Well, ask on the blog.
Okay.
The folks on the blog might know where it is.
Was it Saxby Chambliss?
If you find
number
it.
Number two, Sam.
Yeah.
Sam, if I could, real quick. You know, they just had a $135 million winner in the Mega Millions. You know, I'm always questioning, why don't they have $135 million winners? But, you know, I would buy more tickets if I knew the chance of me winning was a lot better than what your chances are of winning $135 million. Do you agree?
You know, I don't play the lottery, but I guess. I mean,
he's a heck of a blackjack player, though.
Yeah, no. I just play blackjack. But, maybe that makes some sense. I don't know. Maybe see if we can get a private lottery going. Take that
I actually think that does make some sense. I think if people thought they had a better chance of winning, they'd be more likely to buy.
Yeah, I think that's true. You could be on to something, buddy. All right, let me know. Send me an email.
Yeah, real quick. It just shows how dumb we are as Americans, how dumb. We're so dumb. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, I think there is something
Thanks,
to that.
Sam.
All right, I appreciate it. Your phone's not great, but if you find out what that bit was, send it to me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We're gonna take. Yeah, we're gonna. You can talk to us. You can IM me on the Flip Show at Majority FM. We'll go in a second. But I will say this, that there is something in the American psyche that is about like I want to win it all. I need the big
That's
win.
So us. Yes.
And there, you know, statistically, people, more people buy tickets when the thing is huge. I mean,
That's true.
The funny thing is like more people. people are more encouraged to buy tickets when they have less of a chance of winning.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It just goes to show you.
It's why I love America.
Chuck Sklar had a very funny joke, which was they should, instead of calling it like scratch to win and this and that, they should just have it called lose your insulin money.
Something and people like would that. Still buy
something
it.
That actually reflects what it is. All right, folks, we're going to go to the flip show. I gave you some. Wow. Not only did you get Casual Friday, this is good. What a misnomer. You get 15 extra minutes of free material sucked off the back of the members who are paying for you people. You got Cliff Schechter today. You got phone calls. Man, folks. You can become a member of the Majority Report. Now would be the best time to do it, except for in the future also, and in the past.
Really pretty much every day.
Every day is a great day to become a Majority Report member. You will keep this show alive. Eventually we'll be able to replace the whirring Vio, on and on and on. And also, of course, don't hesitate to click through the link at the majority.fm. Buy your crap from Amazon via our link. You won't see a difference. But I will. And Evan will. New Dorsey will. Maybe we'll buy New Dorsey a new name.
That'd be great.
And also, don't forget to support justcoffee.coop. Put coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon code box. Get 10% off fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate. Meet us on the flip side. You can IM me at Majority FM. Cliff will stick around. Don't forget, I'll be on, Ed Schultz Show, and tonight I'll be on Kudlow Report. Kudlow Report. All right, talk to you later. Breaking news, I'm going to have to interrupt this free podcast because in the post show we realized we did not play Jimmy Reaper Cake's Song of the Week. This will be inserted into the free podcast. Let's play that Jimmy Reaper Cake song for the week now.
Call your mama, cause Obama got Osama, and I'm celebrating with some marijuana. Smoke a joint, Special Operations Command. They found Osama's crib in Pakistan. Better call your mama, cause Obama got Osama. Two bullets in the head, now there ain't no drama. But I got myself a boy who's only 7. Had to tell him the whole story of 9/11. Now Obama killed Osama, singing, yes we can. Proves that W was a dummy, but Obama's the man. My boy said,
so what?
And shook his head. He said,
isn't that just another person dead?
So call your mama, but don't be hating. It's Mother's Day that we be celebrating. We take care of all mankind, to hell with revenge. This is Jimmy Reaper Cake on Majority.fm.
Wow. I gotta say, that was a very good song. And I like how it was also, I like the message. I like the kids saying, it's just another person dead.
Yeah.
I also appreciated him working in the assassination of Osama bin Laden with Mother's Day.
I think there are two things that go together very well. Peas in a pod.
All right. Well, now we can feel confident that we will take all of what I'm just saying up to this point right now for the real show. Perfect.